Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Sawal Muslim. My name is Faisal Patel. Now joining us on the line, we have Brother A.B. Dawji. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Dawji. How are you doing today?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'm feeling absolutely wonderful. I checked through the window of my top floor and the surf is looking great.
Gigi, absolutely, absolute pleasure to have you on a Friday. The highlight of my Fridays to speak to Brother A.B. Dawji. the story that caught your eye this week, Brother A.B. Dawji?
Right. You know, I have one or two stories that raise my eyebrows, but before I get to them, I must tell you about something that happened to me a few days ago that had me completely astounded.
Gee.
No, it wasn't anything to do with my living nightmare.
Gee.
Of Sparks Road, that is Alima Kala. It wasn't about her. Something happened that left me totally speechless. And that, dear listeners, is a very rare occurrence. A.B. Dawji being speechless. But yes, it happened. I was speechless. I was stunned. I was absolutely gobsmacked. That's a nice word there. Eh? Gobsmacked. Gob is an Irish slang meaning mouth. You know, a bully is busy screaming at some smaller guy, shouting at him. The two faces are almost touching. The smaller guy is quiet, taking all this abuse, and without warning, he suddenly gives the bully a sharp smack across the mouth, which leaves the bully totally stunned and bewildered. A sudden, unexpected clap on the mouth, that is what gobsmack means. But in English, this expression means to be astounded, to be stunned, to be astonished. Hey, who said that the big picture wasn't an educational program? Okay, so what is it that had me completely surprised and speechless? Well, it had to do with the topic that is currently being discussed extensively in the media and on social platforms, racism. It's a hot topic, Brother Faisal, as you know. That Sparrow woman really got the ball rolling when she decided to vent her anger by describing black people as monkeys. When the proverbial excrement hit the fan, she tried to backtrack by saying how she was misinterpreted. You know? She was actually being nice, not offensive. Monkeys are cute, she said, therefore blacks are cute.
Yeah.
This Mampara thought that we are stupid enough to believe her silly explanation. And then that DJ fellow, can't remember his name now, who I can't really stand, he weighed in defense of her. He said that she was just exercising her right of freedom of expression.
It's Gareth Cliff, Uncle Abby.
Well, people didn't take too kindly to him freely expressing himself about freedom of expression, so he got fired from his job as a talent judge, and then he sued and got his job back. So, this whole topic of racism has taken center stage, and the atmosphere is highly charged. Very highly charged indeed. And anyone who expresses a view has to be very, very careful in case he or she is misunderstood and then labeled, demonized, and viciously vilified. So I have steered away from this issue. But I am inspired to add my two cents today to this debate by what happened recently, the incident that had me speechless. But I'll get to that later. I just love suspense. Now, I always avoided the topic of racism, as I said, because it's a very complex issue. If you unpack it and dissect it, you can have a whole day's discussion, what gives rise to it, how to respond to it, and so on. But let me say this. There are two aspects to this issue of racism. What you think and what you do. Now, let me explain. What you think. Now, you may hold racist views, and of course that is very bad.
Gee.
You don't express them in public or in the company of those that you think less about. But you do express your views in the company of those you feel safe with, for example, your family. And that is terrible, because you would be influencing your children to be racist also. Or you may express your views in the company of your own kind. Let me be clear. There are many in the Indian community who hold racist views. There's no denying that at all. Many. go to a funeral or wedding, people are huddled around a table, maybe having a chow, and people will talk about this country, and invariably you will hear some strong language about black people. And of course, one or two hot characters will let rip with the K word. By the way, I like this idea of saying K word. Actually, I think it's funny. It's not said out in its full form. And you know what the K word stands for. I know what the K means. Everybody knows what it stands for. But for some reason, we don't say it out completely. He attacked him. This white guy attacked him because he called him the K word. Now, in the U.S., they say, the white guy shouted the N word at her, so she is suing him. The N word? Well, we all know what it means, but it's not polite or something to say out completely in its full form. And here's the funny thing. It's perfectly acceptable for African Americans, that is black people in the U.S., to use the N word in sort of a buddy-buddy friendly way, you know?
Gee.
You curve that basketball there mighty fine, nigga. And the rap songs are replete with obscenities and, of course, the N word. But it's all perfectly acceptable if an African American says it. Of course, when it comes to the so-called Indians, it's regarded as very offensive to use the C word. You know what I mean?
Of course, absolutely.
C word. Let me just say it out loudly. Kuli. Actually, I personally am unruffled by this word. Someone calling me a dirty, stinking kuli? Well, my response would be, excuse me, but unlike you, I have a bath every day, and I'm not a porter at the railway station. Yeah, but that's me, eh? Sticks and stones, you know what they say, break my bones, but words can't hurt me. Water over the duck's back. Which reminds me, once I was turning from Sparks Road into Brickfield Road at the traffic light, I put the indicator on at just a bit too late.
Gee.
And stopped to let the oncoming cars pass. So the guy behind me was fed up. He wanted to go straight on and was stuck behind me. He hooted and hooted and then came to the left. It was a Javaro. Javaro, I don't know if I can say that, or maybe I should just say the J word.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
He opened his window as he passed and he said, "You drive like a horse's backside." Actually, he didn't say backside. He used a stronger word. It made him feel good, I'm sure. But it got me very puzzled.
Gee.
I have, my dear brother, in all my years of living, never, ever come across a car driven by a horse's backside. So I think the comparison with my driving was not very accurate. Anyway, I digress. So yes, I was speaking about a person harboring racist thoughts, but keeping them or expressing them completely within his own circles. Like-minded people, let me underline this, that holding such views, even in private, is wrong. It's just plain bad. Now to the next aspect, what you do. Remember I said what you think, and the second part is what you do. Having racist views is bad, but if you act them out, if you actively discriminate against, for example, black people, if you abuse them because you consider them to be inferior, if you show them disrespect, pay them a lesser wage for equal work that others do, if you do all of this, then it is infinitely worse than just harboring negative thoughts. Let me illustrate this.
Okay.
If a fellow thought badly about Indians, well, he can take his silly, warped, uneducated views and stick them. But if he takes it further and tells me, "Sorry, I don't like Indians, so I will not allow you to stay at my holiday resort," well, then I'm going to take him to task. A call to the Human Rights Commission will fix him up very nicely. So some people will always hold racist views, like Sparrow, and maybe by social interaction, such things will diminish in time, but not disappear entirely. It's a matter of evolution.
Gee.
Okay, I'm going to stop there about overt and covert racism. And now for what you've been waiting for. the incident that left me speechless, absolutely astounded, God-smacked. I wasn't sure whether I should tell you all you listeners, about this incident. So I took the matter to this very important informal committee, which is, of course, the family supper table. And Nabil said, no, Dad, don't do it, eh? Don't do it. People will misunderstand you, and then you will be in trouble. You're going to catch it. And Uzair said, I agree with Nabil. People will think that you are making a political statement. And daughter-in-law Sauda chimed in and said, maybe some people will say that you are a racist. Well, dear listeners, I considered all the resolutions that were passed at the meeting, and in typical fashion, I threw them out of the window. And perhaps I decided to throw caution out of the window also. You know, I have no agenda. I'm simply going to relate the incident. I am not going to embellish it. I'm not going to exaggerate it one bit. And I'm not going to add any masala to it. Wallahi al-Azim, I'm going to tell you exactly as it happened. Okay? Eventually, here's the story. I needed to refill my printer's ink cartridge. So I went to the ink shop at the mall at the up the road from Isipingo. The manager, Teddy, was serving a gentleman, so I left the cartridge on the counter and told Teddy that I will pop into game for just 2 or 3 minutes. But when I came back, a rather large lady with her large daughter had engaged Teddy. My cartridge just lay there untouched. Well, I wasn't going to argue with this very tough-looking auntie that was in front of me. And so I waited. Disaster, my brother, disaster. There was also, this place was also an internet cafe, but the computers were not working. So Teddy was obliged to help them on his computer at the counter. They wanted him to put the whole school geography assignment on the computer. Teddy had to find the pictures, Teddy had to get the correct fonts, Teddy had to set everything out as they instructed. 2 minutes passed. Another chap walked in, a black gentleman, about 30 years old. We both stood at the counter watching the slow motion tamasha, getting silently fed up. 30 minutes passed, then 45 minutes, 1 hour, and the auntie told Teddy to find a picture about Mars. I whispered to my fellow sufferer, I'd like to send the mother and daughter to the moon. And he laughed. He was now my friend, this chap, who we were laughing together. He was now my friend in the struggle. Let's call him John. On the counter, John had some papers. I think he wanted to make copies or something. I saw the heading of the paper, something to do with building construction. So I said, hey, are you into building? And he said, yes. I said, is it your business? And he said, yes. Well, I had nothing else to do except to follow the assignment subheading number 64, volcanic rock formation on Jupiter. So so I decided to chat with this guy, and I asked John, how's business? And he said, hey, my friend, the building industry is very difficult. So I thought, maybe I'll just pass the time by idly teasing him. So I said, don't you get any tenders? And he answered me, no, it's very difficult. I said, maybe you should talk to my friend Julius. And he laughed and he said, hey, you know Malema? I said, yeah, of course I know him. And just to tickle him a little more, I said, and you know what? I'm thinking of voting for the EFF. And he said, hi, no man, you can't vote for the EFF. Then he got all very serious and he said, you must vote for the DA. I said, what? The DA? Are you serious? Are you with the DA? I asked him. And he answered, yes, I am a DA member. You must also vote for the DA. This was getting very interesting. 1.5 hours had passed. Auntie was on subheading 84. So I thought I will just have a nice friendly debate to pass the time. I said, my friend, how can you vote for the DA? It is a party for white people. And he responded, no, you are wrong. The majority of the DA members are black. I said, now, listen, You just look at the DA in Parliament, you only see white faces there. Yeah. And he shot back, but hey, Maimane is the leader. Well, I answered, my man, listen here. The blacks may be in the majority in the DA, but what matters is who makes the decisions. It's the white people. And he said, you are wrong. I said, no, I'm right. Didn't you read the papers just about a week ago that an important black DA leader in Soweto complained strongly that blacks are sidelined in the DA's decision-making? And he said, no, I didn't read that. I tried to Google the article on my phone, but the connection was bad. Anyway, I finished off by saying, my friend, I will vote for the DA when more and more black people make most of the important decisions right at the top. And then, dear listeners, he dropped the bombshell. He came close to me and he said, you must agree with me, my friend. White people know how to run things properly. I couldn't believe what he was saying. I said, what? And he said it again. White people know how to do the things properly. We blacks cannot. I was absolutely speechless. I didn't know how to answer him. And so, my dear listeners, I will leave it right there, except to say that after that encounter, I was thinking about it many times. I wonder how to classify John. Should I conclude that he is a racist? Very thought-provoking indeed, and I leave you with that also. Okay, let's take a quick look. Do we have time, brother?
Gigi, no, absolutely we have time. What's happening in Palestine, brother Ebidauri?
All right, let me just tell you about a bizarre story. You know, we'll take a quick look at the strange and outrageous story that I promised you that made it into the media, the shock and awe stuff, jaw-dropping and the bizarre. Well, dear listeners, you can't get more bizarre than this story. These days in our community, you find some very fine young people, males and females, and even not so young, who don't have a partner, meaning that they are not married. They just can't find the right person. And that's so sad indeed, because one needs to share one's thoughts and experiences with someone close, a spouse. It's a different kind of closeness, companionship, compared to having a friend, even a best friend. Now look here, I'm not one to denigrate anyone's religion or culture. But in China, at least in some parts of China, if you lived all of your life unmarried, you are a bachelor.
Gee.
That's not nice, it's not good. But when you are dead, you are not alone anymore. You have a partner, a new bride. What is this crazy custom? Let me read to you from the British Telegraph newspaper. It says, grave robbers in rural China are stealing women's corpses to feed a new demand for, in inverted commas, ghost weddings, an ancient ritual where elderly bachelors are given a bride to be buried with when they die. And a rural tradition that began 3,000 years ago, families in rural China consider it bad luck for a single man to pass into the afterlife without a female companion at his side. One way to prevent his spirit becoming restless is to provide a female corpse for him to be buried with. While this ghoulish practice has long been outlawed under communism, it has now revived as newly wealthy country dwellers pay up to £10,000 per bride. Well, my brother, that's around 220,000 rands. The Sunday Telegraph visited the village of Dongbao in China's northern Shaanxi province, which has suffered 15 corpse theft in the last 3 years alone.
Gee.
At least 15 others have vanished from other hamlets across the region. And this was said by Li Fukai, 53 years old. He's standing over a tomb where his father now rests alone. Who knows where they took my mother? She is now ill-gotten gains for thieves. And 43-year-old Jiang Chouhi, who also had the remains of his great aunt and great grandmother stolen. My grandmother must now be wandering other villages, experiencing a painful afterlife. Remains of younger women and those who have recently died are more expensive on the black market, but decomposed female skeletons can be reinforced with steel wires before they are clothed and buried, according to Chinese media. Jing Yingliang, age 47, whose mother was also stolen, said some residents had filled the tombs with concrete to stop potential thieves, while others carried out daily patrols, hired security guards, or moved the burial sites nearer to the village dwelling. And he says, while waving his hands in anger, "What can you do? These thieves have dug 3 meters down." And regaining his composure and reclining back in his chair, he added very quickly, "I used to say a little something to my parents at the tomb's sweeping festival, but this year I only have my father to talk to. I will tell him to take care of himself and wait until I find mother." A shame, eh? The bully must be so lonely while he's throwing dosing with somebody. Well, dear listeners, if that is not a heart, a hair-raising story, then I don't know. Very creepy indeed. Okay, very quick last amazing story. Can you guess who is the wealthiest man in the world, Brother Faisal?
The only person I know that's wealthy is Bill Gates. That's what I know.
The boss of Microsoft. What is he worth? And the answer is $75 billion. I don't know how many zeros. I can't even write zeros. 75 million. I don't know how many there. Here's another question. What will happen if Bill Gates dropped a dollar on the floor? Well, assuming that it takes him about 2 seconds to bend down and pick it up, to pick up this dollar, well, that $1 will be worth $228.32 in the 2 seconds that it takes for him to pick it up, meaning that every single second Bill Gates earns $114.16 per second. Did you get that? Every second he earns $114.16. That's about 1,800 rands per second, my dear friends. Falloose just pouring in. Amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know what? I could use that kind of pocket money.
Now we all can use, Uncle Ebi. What's happening in Palestine at the moment?
Today I will speak about the tale of two mosques. And let me say this. We must always remember to commemorate important events in our history. You know, we don't do that. And if you forget, well, like it or not, I will always be here to remind you. So, and so to the first masjid, the Al-Ibrahimi Masjid in Hebron, known to us as Al-Khalil. Hebron is Al-Khalil. Hebron is 29 kilometers from Jerusalem and is in the West Bank. The Al-Ibrahimi Masjid is right there in Hebron on a small hill, a large fortress-like structure where Ibrahim alayhi salam, Isaac alayhi salam, Yaqub alayhi salam are buried there with their wives. So just over a week ago, the 25th of February was the terrible anniversary of a terrible tragedy, a massacre that took place there in 1994. Let me read to you from an Al Jazeera report. I don't know if we're running out of time yet.
We just got a few minutes left, Uncle Levy.
All right. On February 25th, 1994, a U.S.-born Israeli military physician walked into the Al-Ibrahimi Masjid in Hebron, armed with a Galil assault rifle. It was early morning during the holy month of Ramadan, and hundreds of Palestinians were crammed inside, bowed in prayer. Baruch Goldstein, who had emigrated to Israel in 1983, lived in Kiryat Arba settlement on the outskirts of the city. While the people knelt down, I'm going to race through this, he opened fire and he killed 29 worshippers. The 29 were killed instantly, and it is reported that the final death toll was between 50 and 70. And the Israeli government said that this guy here was suffering from psychological problems. Anyway, the Palestinians managed to grab him inside the masjid and they killed him. Let me just race through this. And here's the bizarre thing. For many right-wing Jews, and especially the settler movement, Goldstein was a martyr to the cause. They regarded him as a saint. His grave in a ceremonial plaza overlooking the Palestinian town of Hebron became a place of pilgrimage. During the annual observance of the Purim holiday, settlers gather at Goldstein's grave to celebrate his deed and sing songs in praise of the man they regarded as a noble martyr. One of the songs include the verse, "Dr. Goldstein, there is none other like you in the world. Dr. Goldstein, we love you. He aimed at terrorists' heads, squeezed the trigger hard and shot bullets and shot and shot." Then the settlers marched down to pray at the Al-Ibrahimi Masjid, accompanied by a massive show of force by Israeli army troops. Now, let me just jump quickly to the other masjid, and that is the first Qibla, the Haram al-Sharif, the Al-Aqsa Masjid. Okay, so very often we hear the question raised, what's wrong with you Muslims? You say that you believe in freedom of religion, so why do you violently prevent Jews from praying at Al-Aqsa? Now, that sounds like a reasonable question. So how do you answer that? Well, the answer is quite simple. It's not that some just want to innocently and harmlessly pray there. No, there are many hundreds, if not thousands, of right-wing fundamentalist Zionist Jews who want to rebuild the Jewish temple at the place where Al-Aqsa is located, meaning that they have to destroy Al-Aqsa. And many have tried. Way back in 1969, Dennis Michael Rohan, dressed as a Maulana, went into Al-Aqsa and set fire to the minbar, which burned part of the roof trusses also. And in January 27, 1984, a group of Jews were caught with explosives trying to enter Al-Aqsa to blow it up. Since then, there have been over 30 attempts to destroy Al-Aqsa. But let me just cut to the thrust. We may think that these are just individuals or fringe groups, but I was totally taken aback by what I heard this week. A leading member of the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, said something quite chilling. I don't know if I still got any time for this, but this is very important. He said something quite chilling. Here's an extract. Likud lawmaker, Deputy Speaker of the Knesset, Oren Hazan, announced last Thursday night at a panel discussion, he said, if the day comes and I have the opportunity to lead the country, and not to mention become the Prime Minister, I will build a temple on the Temple Mount. After the panel discussion organized by the students, this reporter asked Hazan how he would demolish Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock in order to make way for the temple. And he replied, it would not be responsible at this point in time to tell you how we would do it, but I will say it clear and loud. When I have the opportunity to do it, I will. And Hazan told the students that demolishing Islam's third holier site would not incite violent blowback or elicit significant international condemnation. He said, it was said that the world would get riled up, blowing up Arafat's helicopters, blowing up the airport in Dahania, in Gaza, and destroying the Palestinian government buildings, etc. In each case, people were afraid, and they folded, and nothing happened. And I think it's the same with the Temple Mount, meaning where Al-Aqsa is. So there you are, folks. He says that when Israel did some terrible things, the world jumped up and down, condemning left, right, and center. But after a while, the dust settled and things were forgotten. It happens all the time. Remember how they killed Sheikh Yassin, and everybody said, wow, this is a mighty explosion. Huge, massive uprising will start that will never stop. And Israel showed that it didn't care, didn't bother, and immediately afterwards killed Rantisi. And people were again outraged, and then everything died down. Israel destroyed Gaza not so long ago. The world was outraged. Then the dust settled. And the sense of outrage diminished. So this guy Hazan says it will be the same with Al-Aqsa. Destroy it, the world will be angry. Muslims will go crazy, but after a while, it will all settle down. What a dangerous lunatic. And who holds... there are many others, madmen, who hold the same views. May Allah protect us from all of them.
And finally, Uncle Abi, light at the end of the tunnel.
Right. 2 minutes for that, right?
Gee.
A sign in a shop in Overport selling sweets. Assistant required urgently, must be matriculated and must have diabetes. Rashid Mamu and his wife, this is the second one. I don't know if you got the first one. Sweet shop, okay. Right, we won't go back there. Rashid Mamu and his wife, Zora, moved from Parlock to Mayfair in Johannesburg. Rashid really hated Zora's cat, and he thought that he would leave it behind in Durban when they moved. But it was not going to be. He really, really hated the cat. It used to leave a killer stink all over the house. It was fat and lazy, and the feeling was mutual. It growled every time that it saw Rashid Mamu.
Yeah.
And sometimes it let out a loud scream for no reason whatsoever, just to get Zora to come running into the room and said, hey, now what you did to Fluffy? He really hated that cat, so he decided to get rid of it. One day he put it into his car, and he drove 5 blocks away from the house in Mayfair. As he came back home, he saw the cat merrily walking up the driveway. 2 days later, he takes it and drops it 10 blocks away. 1 hour later, the cat is scratching at the front door. Every few days, he drops the cat further and further away, but it keeps coming back. one day he got fed up and he drove a couple of kilometers far away.
Ji.
And he dropped the cat off and he was very happy that at last he had got rid of this thing.
Ji, ji.
A few hours later he calls home and he asks Zora, Zora, is the cat there? And Zora answered, yes, why are you asking? And Rashid says, put the cat on the phone, I need directions to get home.
Yeah, I think I'm sure the cat anymore. But anyway, Jazakallah, Uncle Abi, really wonderful talking to you. And obviously, after a long, newsy week, really bring some light at the end of the tunnel and some light at
you. Always a pleasure to hear you also, to hear your views also on your program, Sheikh.
Jazakallah so much. And inshallah, we will catch up with you next week.
Inshallah.
And have a good weekend, Uncle Abi.
Inshallah.
Okay. Jazakallah. That is Uncle Abi Dawji, as always, sharing some of his thoughts and comments with us, and obviously bringing a light-hearted touch to a rather serious week filled with murders and constitutional court hearings. It's nice to go into the weekend with a happy note. And, well, let's just hope that this weekend is no other funny stuff. We know there's a legislation is taking place. But let's go for a quick break. After the break, we're going to be speaking to Maulana Habib Bobat, and he's on his way to Durban as we speak. I mentioned earlier in the program that Radio Islam's got a phenomenal program taking place this weekend. If you are in Durban or if you are in Joburg, go to Durban and enjoy the program that we got there. It is an absolute blitz weekend, a fun-filled educational weekend with the Radio Islam in your company. We're going to be speaking to Maulana Habib Bobat in just about a minute's time. Let's go for a quick break. Inshallah, we will be joined hopefully by Maulana Habib Bobat after this. Stay tuned to Sawal Muslim, where you don't miss a thing with myself, Faisal Patel.
The Big Picture program was sponsored by Steering Auto Inspector Car in Benoni, the thinking person's car dealership. Steering Auto, the home of pre-loved cars.